Let's say you get up in the morning and you've had a really good restful sleep. I don't often get that. I'm usually awake in the middle of the night for some reason, but you wake up, you feel rested, you're ready to go, you're ready, you know, ready to have a good day. And then on your way to work, there's just no traffic. You just make a good time on your way to work, and that's good. And you know, you get to work, and some of your coworkers are happy with your work. You get a compliment maybe, and you get a good start to your day. In fact, when you go to lunch, everybody's together, everybody's getting along, and you know, how could you ask for a better day? It's just one thing after another. And then some reviews come in from some customers where they rate your performance or whatever, and you get good marks, and it's just, oh wow. Hopefully somebody's had a day like this at some point in their life. Maybe not too many days. And you know, after, so you had a good morning, you had a good lunch, you had a good beginning to your afternoon, and then the boss comes in and says, yeah, about this. You didn't handle this properly, and I don't know what we're going to do about it, but you know, whatever the boss says, and it's a real downer. And you've probably had days like that. And when you leave, when you go home, it's probably something like this. You know, all these good things, right? You have one bad one, and your brain is focused on the bad one. I don't know how you're, if you're like this, but I know I am. I get in a bad mood about something. It doesn't matter how many other good things are going on around me. My brain focuses just like on the what I consider to be bad. And that's a human thing. And I found this, as I must not be the only one. Here it is. You can get these little things on the internet. Now, your heart knows better. And this is an interesting little, from the same source, obviously. You know, the heart knows you had a good day. Even your brain knows, wants to think about it, but our brain wants to focus. And that's sometimes when I wake up in the middle of the night, that's what's going on. I'm running all these negative things through my mind. I can't get back to sleep. So what we have is a focus on negativity. In fact, it's called a negativity bias. And it's a human thing. I didn't come up with this at all. In fact, what turned me on to it was our friend Matt Earls in a sermon, which I didn't hear live, but somebody was telling me about it. And said, you need to get on, you need to listen to this thing. So I did. And it was a good sermon, and it talked about a particular study, and he brought up the point of negativity bias in his sermon. And I had to realize, I didn't have to study it to figure this out. I know this is the way I work. This is the way my brain works, the way my body works. I get anxious. I can remember even as a kid, like my feet would sweat, my hands would sweat, and I just, worry about things, I guess. And so we have a negativity bias, and it's something like this. No matter how much positive stuff's going on, that one or two or whatever it is, those negative things can outweigh that. And I'm not saying there aren't sometimes, obviously, things that are negative that do outweigh what else is going on. Sometimes they're very serious. Other times they're not. And as humans, we do this. And it's interesting to consider why we do this. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. This is from a particular study. I'll just read the quote. Even when we experience numerous good events in one day, negativity bias can cause us to focus on the sole bad thing that occurred. It can lead us to ruminate on small things, worry over having made a bad impression, and linger on negative comments. So, you know, we start, not only do we realize like the one thing, but then it's like, well, how about, could have been this, it could have been that, maybe I shouldn't have done that, maybe that person really meant this, meant it this way. And I'm assuming that somebody, some of you in this room are on the same page here, that our brains are very capable of processing all kinds of information and looking for the bad, looking for what's wrong. And then we focus on that. That's what we do. Now, here's what we do. And this is from Carolyn Moore, who's a psychologist and an MBA, and I don't know much about her, but this, I thought this was a good list, and so that's why I brought it. We recall and think about insults more than compliments. that's a general human thing, you know. I could, you know, we get a compliment and we feel good about that, but if we get a, we get something that's negative, that totally outweighs the compliment. I mean, even however many compliments we get, we just tend to think about the insults a lot more. We respond more emotionally and physically to aversive stimuli. In other words, things that are negative, things that we're not happy with, things that we think are somehow or another a problem for us, we respond more severely emotionally and physically. Like our bodies actually react to that, to aversive stimuli. Now, I mean, this is just a fact of human existence. This is the way we are. We dwell on unpleasant or traumatic events more than the pleasant ones. Well, these are all kind of related. But for some reason, our brains are attracted to the unpleasant things, the traumatic things. And that's what we that's what we tend to dwell on. Finally, we focus our attention more quickly on the negative rather than positive. So if you get a choice between going one way or the other, we tend to, as humans, go in the negative direction. Now, that's just what we do. That's the way we are. And here's a quote from another study. Or not a quote, just a summary. Even when we experience numerous good events, actually this is a summary of several studies. Even when we experience numerous good events in one day, negativity bias can cause us to focus on the sole bad thing that occurred. It can lead us to ruminate, that's what I do, I kind of ruminate, on small things, worry over having made a bad impression, and linger on negative comments, okay? And the other psychologist mentioned that. That's from these people here. Different people, several different studies. Why do we have a negativity bias? I don't know about you, but I'm talking in general with human beings. Why do you think? Actually, you know, anybody want to? I have a few ideas here, but go ahead.
A lot of times, like, if your boss comes to you with something at work that's bad, the good stuff is just sitting there, but the bad thing,
it requires time and energy. So that's something we'll focus more on, where we have to. Any other ideas? I mean, even going back in terms of why, not why we might, well, that's a great example. Why do we develop that way as humans? Why do you think? Any ideas? Okay. One reason is because it's instinctive. We have certain instincts. One of them is self-preservation. And, you know, God put that into us for good reason, so we don't do things, hopefully, that are going to damage us in some way. So we tend to be able to notice negative things. I have somebody that worked for me one time, and he referred to something that we were trying to do as exception reporting. In other words, pay attention to the things that don't fit the way they're supposed to. That's something we do naturally. You know, if we spot a danger, because it's a danger to us. You know, we spot a hole in the sidewalk or something, a pothole in the ground. You know, we still don't want to walk in that and twist our ankle or fall down like I did the other day in my own yard, because we have dogs that decide to randomly dig little holes here and there, and you don't know, and you step in it, and all of a sudden you're on your bottom. So we try to look out for that, and that's part of our self-preservation instinct that we have, which is, it's a good thing we have it. So that's something that's built into us, okay? We can't really do much about that. Psychologists, other scientists will tell you that childhood development could have something to do with it, and it's related. As a child, as an infant, you learn that some things have reward, some things don't give you a reward, or some things have a negative consequence. And so as your brain is forming, as our brains formed when we were little, we learned this works and this doesn't work. And we adjust our behavior accordingly. And those pathways that we develop when we're very young are with us the whole rest of our lives. And in some cases, many things that have to do with mental illness are developed in us as very little things, as our brains are trying to protect us. And as we're trying to figure out how to navigate life, if we have traumatic experiences when we're very young, or long-term traumatic, you know, family conditions or other environmental things, it can affect the way our brain works for our entire lives. So that's something else that goes on, is that, you know, when we're young, that helps us develop. And this is a fancy way of saying, you know, sometimes we learn without having to think about it. right? You can develop habits because, I didn't think of a good example, I should have, maybe you can think of one, but you realize like, well, I've got a shed, right? And there's a shelf in this shed that's about this high. And so every time I got to get underneath that shelf and do something down here, I got to think, otherwise I'll hit my head. And finally I put like, mind your head, which is what was written on the constellation down in Baltimore. Mind your head, you know. I think about it every time I go in there. But the problem is once I get down there and do whatever I'm doing, and I turn around and go out, I'm not minding my head anymore, and I hit it on the way out. So I got all kinds of lumps on my head. But hopefully we learn from things like that. We learn from physical consequences or emotional, mental consequences of our actions. And so our bodies and our brains work in such a way that we develop a sensitivity to certain things without even thinking about it. So sometimes, you know, we ruminate, we're focused on this negative, but it's just a natural thing. It's part of, again, of our self-defense mechanism that we learn without having to think about it. Like, better not do this. And we get some habits to try that our body or our brains try to develop to keep us from having to go down that path again because it was a bad path. So there's some. This is all background to what we're going to talk about. So not necessarily important, but it could be helpful. But sometimes negativity turns our world upside down. We get all wrapped up in it. And you know, there could be all kinds of examples of why, you know, how that happens and why it happens. Let's just look at a couple. Our brains respond more intensely to negative stimuli. Again, that's part of the self-defense mechanism. We just can't help that. That's just the way our brains are made. That's the way we as humans are. Things that are negative, things that could hurt us, demand, as Tammy put it, they demand more attention. So we have to focus in those directions. There's experiments that measure brain activity, all right, and where they can measure, this somehow or another they measure the electrical activity in your brain, and they give you various pictures. And these pictures are of some positive things and some negative things. And they have proved, just from doing this, that there's more activity, more electrical activity in the brain with the negative stuff than there is with the positive stuff. So that's the way we've been made. Here's another example that somebody listed. News coverage is predominantly negative. So when we gather information about our world, we tend to focus on the negative. If things positive, things are going okay, that doesn't make the news. You know, what's the expression about news? What leads? If it, remember that? If it does what? It leads. If it bleeds, it leads. That's what the newspaper people used to say to each other when we had newspapers. I guess we still have some, but you know, it's those are the stories that get out in the front because that's what people are interested in. That's what we want to know. We want to know what's going on, the crime, the negative things. And Matt had pointed out in his sermon that he was looking at a particular study. I don't know how he came upon the study, but her name was Soroka. And that study was trying to figure out, is this just something that we'd like in North America where we have this, you know, certain society here in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, and so forth? Is this just something that's local, the way we are? Or is the whole world like this? And so they studied various groups from different nationalities all over the world and found that really it's a human thing. It's not just us, it's a human thing. The news coverage is negative, but it's because that's what we seek to find out. That's what we want to know. And negative emotions last longer than positive ones. I can speak to that. You know, when I'm in a negative mood, it doesn't go away real fast. And if you're like me, sometimes you pray about that. You say, oh, you know, God, please help me to get up. You know, I got to stop thinking like this. And it doesn't, you know, you just can't snap your fingers and it happens. But there are tools, and we'll get into that a little. There are tools that'll help us. So what can we do about it? We can say, all right, you were made this way, we're doomed. Like Lucy's saying there to Charlie Brown. We're doomed. We can't do a thing about it. But there are some things we can do. And the sermon's not about all these, but I just mentioned a few. One, we can be more self-aware. That is, we can challenge the negative self-talk. When we start talking negatively to ourselves, we can say, well, wait a minute, I shouldn't, you know, say to yourself, I shouldn't be feeling that way. I had five things that were great that happened today. I had one bad one. It was really a pretty good day. And we can, you know, work our way through that and try to help our own brains to focus in the positive. Excuse me. Mindfulness. There are certain things that we can do that help. These are physical things. Breathing, meditation, that's in the Bible, of course, and we're going to see some of that later. These things can help as well. I talked about this, I don't remember when it was, a long time ago, but I started singing, and I'm not going to sing this time, but, you know, we accentuate the positive, right? Eliminate the negative. It's hard to eliminate the negative, but the point is to focus on the positive things. When the positive things happen, and this is good advice, and it's not the point of the sermon, but I need to be better at this myself. When something positive happens, savor it. You know, we have two dogs. One of them eats slow, and one of them eats fast. Okay, the one who eats slow is a lot heavier. I don't know if that has anything to do with the one that eats. You feed him, and he just breathes it in down. He's done, and he doesn't say. I don't think he even tastes his food. I have no idea. It's gone. Whereas the other one is slow, picks at it, whatever. And how about positive things in our lives? Can we savor that? Actually enjoy the flavor, enjoy the taste? Let it linger. You know, use the word linger and enjoy it. As humans, sometimes we don't do that. We linger on the negative instead of the positive. And then there's another one. It's called cognitive restructuring. In other words, what's that mean? It means think differently, right? Think differently. Reframe. There's certain things happen. You don't change. You can't change. Oh, it didn't happen. That doesn't do any good to pretend it didn't happen. But we can look at it differently. And actually, this is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about thinking differently to help battle this negativity bias. So we think about insults more than compliments. We respond more emotionally and physically to the negative things. We dwell on the unpleasant things instead of the pleasant things. We focus our attention more quickly and more completely on the negative things. Why do we do that? Because it's instinctive for our own preservation, because we've developed that way as children to learn to avoid negative consequences. And we sometimes learn just by force of habit that some things don't work, and so we, without thinking about it, we stop doing them or do them less. So the bottom line is, you're human, I'm human, we have this negativity bias. That's the way we're wired. We were made that way. You didn't make yourself that way. I didn't make you that way. I didn't make myself the way I am, and you didn't make me that way. We were wired that way from the beginning, okay? And if you've just been in the book of Romans, I'm going to go back to Romans 7 and read a few verses here that you're already familiar with, where Paul wrote, and you could read the whole chapter, of course, that nothing good dwells in me. So he knows something about himself, that is in my flesh, for the willing is present in me, but not the doing of good is not. So I want to do these good things, but I don't. And for the good that I would do, that I want to do, I don't do. But I practice the very evil that I don't want. So he's got this battle going on within. But I'm doing the very thing I don't want. You know, if I'm doing that, I'm no longer the one doing it, but sin that dwells in me. And that sounds like a little bit like a cop-out, but it's not. You know, he's just saying, you know, there's this... We're a complex being. We have this battle going on inside of us, and of course he talks about who's going to win later, but he says, I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin which is in my members. Now that's where we are. That's the way Paul described it. It's kind of one of those things where it goes back and forth. I think it was here maybe when Jim was reading this. And we can argue about why God did it this way. Think, I wouldn't have done it that way if I were, you know. But the fact is, he did it that way, and we've got to deal with it. All right? We've got to deal with it. So how do we? And Paul's talking about it here. First of all, he's saying it's not easy. It's not easy. So our natural negativity bias is not aligned with God's wishes for us, but it's done for a reason. It's done for a reason. And I think we understand this. But if you read on in Romans, for those who are according to the flesh set their minds, notice he's talking about minds here, on the things of the flesh, but those who are according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the spirit is life and peace. Because the mind set on the flesh is hostile toward God, for it doesn't subject itself to God, the law of God, sorry. It's not even able to do so, and those who are in the flesh cannot please God. So in Paul's mind, the solution has to do with a change of mind, the way what we're doing with our minds, how our minds work. And the mind has to stop being so fleshly and start being more spiritual. Now, that's a very basic thing, we understand that. So when we look at cognitive restructuring, if you want to call it that, thinking differently, but it's called reframing. Another expression is reframing. And I know I've mentioned this before, but probably not with the slides, and maybe not in detail, as I might have done later. But they call it cognitive reframing. You don't change what happened, but you change the way you look at it. And, you know, it's a trick. So it's not about what happens, but how you frame it. You can't always control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to what happened. And that's something we can control. And we can find a more constructive interpretation. All right, so to change the way we look at something also changes how we experience it, how our thoughts and our emotions. To give you some examples, you can, you know, I could say, this isn't true about me at all, just a theoretical here. I hate my mother because she didn't love me. Well, maybe somebody in this room is a small group, maybe it's not true here, but in some groups that we'd have, you have somebody, a mother who's so self-absorbed, has her own mental issues and whatever, and didn't really love her children the way she should have. You probably know people like that in your life that you've run into. Now you can look at, they say, well, that's, I hate my mom. Or you can say, you know what, life's a challenge for me because I didn't feel loved as a child. And then you don't have to dwell on what you think your mother did to you. So it's a way of reframing it. It's like, it's difficult, but I can work through this. It has to do with how it happened to the child. How about, you know, when we're young and we want to go out for the football team, the basketball team, we get cut. Now, I didn't have much opportunity, but I did get cut once from a baseball team. And that doesn't feel good. And I just let it go. My personal, that's the way I dealt with it. But this thing is just going on by itself. Sorry. Got to go back. I think I know why. We could say, I had a coach, he doesn't like me. He cut me, he's ruined my life. Or we could just, I could have said, I didn't say that at all, but I could say, well, I will work harder, I'm going to get better, and next year I'll go out again, maybe I'll make it next year. So that's a reframing, okay, that's what it's talking about. We take a test, and we do very badly. I remember a test that, well, the professor graded on a curve. We all did terribly, and he graded it, so I might have had a B or a C, I don't know, but basically got most everything wrong. And I could say, well, I'm so stupid, you know, I'll never pass, but I, you know, and luckily I didn't do that, but some people may have. Or you say, no, I'm going to work harder next time. I'm going to work hard, I'm going to get some help if I need some help, and I'll do better on that next test. So that's what's meant by cognitive reframing or reframing an issue. You don't change what happened. We've all failed the test. The professor was nice and he graded it on the curve, so all of us that failed together, it still was like an average grade somehow. And I'm sure the professor looked at it and thought, I must not have taught it very well because the whole class failed, except for this, you know, we had one or two geniuses in there that passed it. So you have a way of looking at it differently. And this thing just keeps going now. James 1, verse 2 to 4. And you could say, you know, some people, I have friends that probably say, what you just said about reframing and all, that's just a bunch of mumbo jumbo psycho babble, and, you know, we have the Bible, we don't need that. Well, here's the Bible, and it says it has some psycho babble in it. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So the Bible condones, and actually, you know, here, condones cognitive reframing. It's saying, you know, yeah, you're going through trials and that's kind of rough, but consider it all joy. That's reframing, all right? James is saying, I want you to reframe what you're going through. because it's not very productive to look at it this way. It's more productive to look at it that way. So I don't think it's psychobabble. I think it's actually true. But how do we do that? How do we go about that? How do we train ourselves to think differently? Is that easy? No. But if you remember the last couple times I've spoken, you know where I'm going with this. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9, Paul makes a list of things that we ought to think about. And later on, he says we ought to do them too. Finally, brethren, whatsoever is true, whatsoever is honorable, whatsoever is right, this is New American Standard Translation, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is good repute, if there's any excellence, and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. That's what we should ruminate on. Let our minds soak it in, think about it, savor it, okay? So our minds naturally want to do this, but Paul says, you know, do this over here, think about this. The things you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things. So it has to do with doing them too, but it starts with thinking. You know, we do out of the abundance of the heart or the brain, the mouth speaks. Our actions come from our thoughts, right? So we've already talked about whatever's true, whatever's honorable, and today we'll spend some time on whatever's right, and it'll touch on the other things as well. Whatever's right. Now, if you look that up, that's the New American Standard says right, the New International Version says right, King James, English Standard Version, the Revised Standard Version all say just. All right, whatever says just. The International Standard Version says fair. That's an interesting translation. It's the only one I saw that said that. Fair. The implication here, whether the general meaning of all of these words and the way they're translated, is righteousness. Things, you know, what's righteous? What's righteous? And had to think about that. What is right, or what is righteous? Any ideas when somebody just asks you that? What's right? If God says, so think about whatever's right. What's right? How do you figure what's right?
Good.
Good. Okay. What makes it good?
God said.
Okay. That's. What's another way of saying that? Yes. How do you measure what's right, what's wrong?
God and the world, Ten Commandments.
Okay. Laws.
And
you look up in the commentaries, to talk about this particular word. That's what they talk about. Especially in the Old Testament, it's talked about law. Now, the Greek word's not used in the Old Testament, but the way it's translated in Septuagint. Whatever's right. It has to, the Greek word is actually, I don't have the, this is the root word, dikai, which has to do with a relationship with law, and it means right. Or righteous. If you add, a few more letters on there, it could mean righteous or righteousness or whatever, adjectives, nouns. But they're all forms of the Greek dike. And it has to do with law, all right? You're measuring by the law what's right, what's wrong. And we understand that. We've learned that in our church life. Righteousness is with respect to law, all right? Of course, the Bible, we'll get to that in a minute. But righteousness has to do with law. Being just has to do with law. These are all as you pointed out, it has to do with God's morals, all right? The things that we find in the Bible. Law is the standard of measurement. So that's how we know. That's how we know what's right, what's wrong, obviously. So what's the problem with that? Well, the problem is that on this planet where we live, Paul quotes in Romans, he's quoting from Psalm 14 and Psalm 53, and he quotes a lot of things there in Romans right in a row. They're not all from the Psalms, but this particular part is. He says, as it is written, there's none righteous, not even one. So we live in a place where, in general, righteousness doesn't exist. That's that's hyperbole, right? There are righteous. The Bible talks about righteous Lot, talks about the father of John the Baptizer being righteous, different people being righteous. So it's hyperbole here. It's basically saying, most everybody's cut off from God and is not righteous, and doesn't try to be righteous. And that's the way the world is. And that's where we live, all right? We live in a place that doesn't value righteousness in general. I'm not trying to paint a broad brush on everybody, but in general. and the governments don't, and the society doesn't, you know, our entertainment industry does, whatever. Whatever segment of society that you pick, in general, does not value righteousness unless they have a certain religious and moral component. And, you know, and many do, and we're grateful for that. But the majority don't. So, what do you hear if you watch the action news? I thought this is interesting. I never thought about it before. But when I grew up in the Baltimore area, we had one of the stations, and I guess it's probably true in any large market, they call their news action news. As if, I would think most news is this way, but the action, if it bleeds, it leads. Whatever's going on, you want to think, it's the latest, the greatest, whatever. Unless you watch action news on TV, or if you listen to news radio, we have news radio in Baltimore and Washington where you can just listen to news all day long. You might get your news on Facebook. You might get it on Twitter or X or whatever they call it now. How much righteousness are you going to see in any of those resources? You may see some. There's some good news out there, people doing good things. But in general, no. These are sources of information that are not going to dwell on righteousness. They're going to, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. It's action. That's what we want as human beings. Our minds are predisposed to want to know the negative information. And we don't, in general, we don't fight that very much. And again, I say we could argue with God over that. You know, God made us, and I didn't give all these scriptures, but God made us subject to sin, right? He didn't have to do that, but he did. He did, and that's part of his plan. That's what he's doing, and he wants us to fight sin, and he wants us to battle this negative bias as well. He's given us these things and said, you know what? If you want to be more like me, you're not going to be this way. So we learn by battling some negative things, some negative forces in our lives. And again, we can say we like it or don't like it, but that's the way God did it. We can't change it. And we learn from that. It's part of what Job had to learn. You know, he did everything right, but it didn't work out all that. You know, so he has to battle. And James says, count it all joy when you go through these things. But God lets us go through these things because it helps us to begin to develop his mind. And that's what it's all about, of course. So what is right? What's righteous or just? Well, again, back in Romans 7, earlier in the chapter, Paul wrote, the law is holy and the commandment is holy and righteous and good. Or in the King James, it says holy, just, and good, right? So just, sometimes just, righteous, but similar translation. So the law, you know, what's in the Bible, what is inspired to be written there for our good, is the source of what's right, what's righteous, what's just. There are individuals in the scripture who were righteous that we can learn from. There were some who were unrighteous, we can learn from them. There's something to be learned here. We're not going to get that information in general from Twitter or from Facebook or, you know, these other sources or from the nightly news or news that goes on 24/7 on the cable channels or on news radio. You're not going to get that. And yet we're supposed to focus on that. It's one of the things, one of the eight things there that Paul lists that we should have our minds on. And that'll help us. To read, to study, to meditate on these things. And so for the rest of the sermon, this is an experiment, we'll see how this goes. I want to do something that I've never done before. And I'm going to tell you a story about something that I experienced many, many years ago. We had a graduate club in one of the churches that they called it a graduate club. In one of the churches I attended, and those of us that had been through clubs and over the years were there, and we had a bunch of speaking opportunities, and we were trained in different things. It was good. It was a good experience. And one of the guys in that club, unbeknownst to us, had decided to memorize a big block of scripture. And he told the director that he wanted to recite it in front of us. And I don't know if he was nervous, but I was nervous for him. I was like, what he chose was Psalm 119. he memorized Psalm 119 and got up in front of 20 of us at least. I don't remember how big the group was. And were you there? We had some clubs where the women were there, so it might have been more like 30 or 40, I don't know. Monroe got up and recited Psalm 119 without a mistake, as far as I remember. It was a phenomenal thing. He did pause a couple times to figure out where he was, and kept going. Now, I've never even tried to do anything like that, but I've only read through Psalm 119 a few times. It's going to be one more time today, all right? That's going to be the rest of the sermon. Because Psalm 119, as you, I believe this is correct, I didn't check it, but isn't it, every verse refers to the law, right? Every verse. So if we're supposed to be focused on whatsoever is just or whatsoever is right or righteous, and we know that that's the measuring stick, the yardstick for that is God's law, then anything that talks about God's law and how to use it and how to let it be a part of our lives is going to be helpful. So I thought we would just go through this. I can read it at all. I don't care. If anybody would like to read, just raise your hand and volunteer. But we're going to read it in sections. It goes through the alphabet, I think. You know, there's 22 sections, I guess it is. I didn't count them, I assume it is. We start in the beginning. How blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. All right, so the blessed, you know, happy, they're blessed. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything, you know, everything's going to go right in our lives. But how blessed are those who observe his testimonies. Okay, sometimes he uses words, different words for the law. Who seek him with all their heart. They also do no unrighteousness. Okay, that's the same, we get to the Greek translations, that would be the DK again, only with an A in front of it that means not. They walk in his ways. You have ordained your precepts that we should keep them diligently. Oh, that my ways may be established to keep your statutes. Then I shall not be ashamed when I look upon all your commandments. I shall give thanks to you with uprightness of heart. Uprightness, okay? When I learn your righteous judgments, I shall keep your statutes. Don't forsake me utterly. So we read through here, and I'm going to have comments. I'm not just going to read, but it's like, how do we do battle with the 24/7 barrage of negative information that comes our way? And you can't stop that. We live in a negative world. We live in a world that's, you know, there's a God of this world that's not on the same team, as you want to put it that way, as we're on. And so it's geared against us. The whole, the mechanisms that make the world tick, go round, I guess would be a better, they're all geared against us and geared against the right way of thinking. Paul says, no, don't have that. Don't think that way. And Psalm 119 gives us a lot of help with that, of what our minds should be on. How can a young man keep his way pure? By keeping it according to your word. All right, you got word, we got law, we got statutes, we got judgments, got all these words, but each verse is talking about it. With all my heart, I have sought you. Don't let me wander from your commandments. Your word have I treasured in my heart, that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I have told of all the ordinances of your mouth. I have rejoiced in the way of your testimonies, as much as in all riches. I will meditate on your precepts and regard your ways, and I shall delight in your statutes. I shall not forget your word. Now this, obviously, you know, is a dedication to thinking about what God has said. And, you know, I don't have any clue as to how this was written, when, and, you know, that type of thing, but David, maybe others, that I don't know who's all involved in it, but they had a lot of time to think about this. We live in such a busy world, and our lives are very busy. Mine is, anyway. I'm sure yours is. Our lives are busy, and the world conspires against us having the time to do what Psalm 118 talks about. I think of my friend that trying to memorize all this. What about if you had to write it the first time? I can't imagine memorizing it, but I mean, to write it, how long did that take? How much meditation? How much thoughtfulness did that take? I don't know. But we don't it's very difficult. I'm not saying we don't do it, but it's very, very difficult in this world and in this life to take the time to let these things sink in and overcome the negativity that's all around us, that we get, you know, it hits us all the time. And even if you don't listen to, you know, talk radio, and you don't listen to the 24/7 news on, you know, and you don't get your news from Twitter, and you don't do Facebook or whatever else I mentioned, you're still going to get it because it's all around us. It's all around with our friends, our neighbors. It's just, that's the way the world is designed. But we have to fight that. Back to Psalm 119. Deal bountifully with your servant, that I may live and keep your word. Open my eyes, that I might behold wonderful things from your law. I'm a stranger in the earth. Oh, see? That's a, we're not supposed to be like whatever else is going on. We're strangers. We're pilgrims. Do not hide your commandments from me. My soul is crushed with longing after your ordinances at all times. You rebuke the arrogant, the cursed, who wander from your commandments. Take away reproach and contempt from me, for I observe your testimonies. Even though the princes sit and talk against me, your servant meditates on your statutes. Your testimonies are also my delight. They are my counselors. It talks about meditation. It talks about my delight. This is going back to, you know, some of those things. What do? Well, we focus on the positive, try to minimize the negative. And it takes time and it takes effort. But we have to try to have these, you know, the Bible's full of positive things and positive examples. We need to let them weigh more in our brains than the negative things. But how does that happen? It happens if we think about it, if we meditate on it. You just, you know, and I do that sometimes, and maybe you do. It's like when I can't get back to sleep, and I'll start singing a song we have in the hymnal, or I'll start just trying to memorize. Actually, that's the easiest way of memorizing scriptures, is the songs that we have in the hymnal or scripture. And I do that sometimes, and it helps. It helps, and you've probably done the same thing. But we need to do that even when times aren't troubling. Yeah, we need to have our minds on the things of God. That's the things that, you know, Paul lists there in Philippians. Continuing, my soul cleaves to the dust. Revive me according to your word. I've told you, revive, right? So because we get, negativity weakens us. Physically, mentally, emotionally. You know, we need to be revived and be revived by the positive things. I have told of my ways and you have answered me. Teach me your statutes. Make me understand the way of your precepts, so I will meditate on your wonders. All right, not just your law, but all the things that you do, right? The things that God has done. And I know you do that. Look at the creation and how wonderful it is. My soul weeps because of grief. Strengthen me according to your word. So there's a time to mourn. And there's a lot of negative things going on. And so we hear the news, and the news is negative. And we can have a negative reaction to that. Some of us, I'm not saying in this room, but you know, some you have friends that get mad. You know, the problem is this, and the solution is this. And other people say, no, the problem is this, and the solution is this, and vice versa. Everybody fighting, right? And the bottom line is, it's not God's world. It's not being run according to God's laws that we're reading about in Psalm 119. And we ought to grieve about that and look forward to, as we do this time of year, we start thinking about the fulfillment of the promises in Scripture about the kingdom coming and being reestablished. And we think about that. I think that's what the world needs. Yeah, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. Well, yeah, it needs God's kingdom. And we know that. And we know it's really, although things can get better or worse depending on certain changes or initiatives, but in general, the world's going to get worse and stay bad until Jesus changes the direction of things. Remove the false way from me and graciously grant me your law. I have chosen the faithful way. I have placed your ordinances before me. I cling to your testimonies, O Lord. Don't put me to shame. I shall run the way of your commandments, for you will enlarge my heart. So again, he's saying, you know, if we just focus on these things, and I don't do that. I should read Psalm 119 all the time, or psalms like this. Some psalms are negative too, but this is very positive. And there's times in my life when I get very negative because of all the stuff, and that's a time to go to Psalm 119 and read these things, and not just read them, but then begin to think about how can I be, you can just take a verse out of there, graciously grant me your law. God gives it to us. How can I make that a part of me? And think, not to be put to shame. So this is real helpful. And I haven't taken advantage of it the way I should. Teach me, O Lord, of the way of your statutes, and I shall observe it to the end. Give me understanding that I might observe your law and keep it with all my heart. Make me walk in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it. Incline my heart to your testimonies and not to dishonest gain. Sometimes, that because we have this negative, inherent negativity bias, our brains lean toward, right? We're inclined to the negative. We want to know the negative, right? That's the way we're made. But the verses here say, help me to incline toward your law. But that's the way we should be drawn. And that would be, very helpful if we could do that. Turn away my eyes from looking at vanity and revive me in your ways. Use that word revive again in the translation anyway. Establish your word to your servant and that which produces reverence for you. Turn away my reproach, which I dread, for your ordinances are good. Behold, I long for your precepts. Revive me through your righteousness. I didn't look up that word. I said, I need to do that. Revive. What's revive about? Is there a lot? May your loving kindness also come to me, O Lord, your salvation according to your word. For I will have an answer for him who reproaches me, for I trust in your word. So our answers need to do with the law, right? Not that we hit back in kind. No, we answer according to God's word, if we have to answer at all. But we do it in a way that is godly. Do not take the word of truth utterly out of my mouth, for I wait for your ordinances. So I will keep your law continually, forever and ever. And I will walk at liberty, for I seek your precepts. That's interesting. The Bible talks about law and liberty together. God tells us what to do, but that's freedom. That's true freedom. For I seek your precepts. I will also speak of your testimonies before kings, and shall not be ashamed. I shall delight in your commandments, which I love, and I shall lift my hands to your commandments, which I love. Lift up my hands, which I love, and I will meditate on your statutes. So it talks about meditation. We keep our minds on these things. Remember the word to your servant, in which you have made me hope. This is my comfort in my affliction. So we are afflicted. We get these negative things are really happening, and we can be afflicted, but by meditating on God's law and his word, that gives us comfort. That your word has revived me. You've given us life again. The arrogant utterly deride me. Yet I don't turn aside from your law. I've remembered your ordinances of old, O Lord, and comfort myself. Burning indignation has seized me because of the wicked. So we do it. We get upset when we see the negative things going on. See the wicked who forsake your law. Your statutes are my songs in the house of my pilgrimage. O Lord, I remember your name in the night and keep your law. This has become mine that I observe your precepts. So we need those times when I can't sleep, I need to be focused on God and his way, his law. The Lord is my portion. I have promised to keep your words. I sought your favor with all my heart. Be gracious to me according to your word. I considered my ways and turned my feet to your testimonies. I hastened and did not delay to keep your commandments. The cords of the wicked have encircled me, but I have not forgotten your law. At midnight, I shall rise to give thanks to you because of your righteous ordinances. I am a companion of all those who fear you and of those who keep your precepts. The earth is full of your loving kindness, O Lord, to teach me your statutes. And that's interesting, too. He says, giving thanks at midnight, maybe that's because you're awake for some reason, but then realizes he's a companion of all those who fear you. You're not alone. I'm not alone. There's all kinds of people out there that go through the same things and believe the same things. And they're, you know, we're with them. We don't even know them, a lot of them, but we have companions, many, many. You have dealt well with your servant, O Lord, according to your word. Teach me good discernment and knowledge, for I believe in your commandments. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I keep your word. You are good and do good. Teach me your statutes. The arrogant have forged a lie against me. With all my heart, I will observe your precepts. Their hearts covered with fat, but I delight in your law. It's good for me that I was afflicted, that I may learn your statutes. Good for me that I was afflicted. You know, count it all joy when we go through trials, James said. Gets that idea from their scriptures. It's good for me that I was afflicted, I may learn your statutes. The law of your mouth is better to me than thousands of gold and silver pieces. Your hands have made me and fashioned me. Give me understanding that I may learn your commandments. May those who fear you see me and be glad, because I wait for your word. I know, O Lord, that your judgments are righteous, and that in faithfulness you have afflicted me. So we are afflicted, but God's being faithful. Now, what's that mean? We know what that means. So that's part of how God is molding us and shaping us as the master potter. Part of that is that we go through afflictions. So when we're going through that, it sounds counterintuitive, but we realize that's God's hand on us in a kind way, actually. Doesn't seem like that at the time, but we have to have these perspectives that are being expressed here in this psalm. I don't know where it was. I know, O Lord, that you're righteous, your judgments are righteous, and that in faithfulness you have afflicted me. Now continuing, O may your loving kindness comfort me according to your word to your servant. May your compassion come to me that I may live. For your law is my delight. May the arrogant be ashamed, for they subvert me with a lie. But I shall meditate on your precepts. May those who fear you turn to me. Even those who know your testimonies, may my heart be blameless in your statutes, so that I will not be ashamed. My soul languishes for your salvation. I wait for your word. My eyes fail with longing for your word. While I say, when will you comfort me? Though I've become like a wineskin in the smoke, I don't forget all your statutes. How many are the days of your servant? When will you execute judgment on those who persecute me? Now, that's kind of expressing a little bit of like, I want you to do something about these people, but God doesn't always do that. The arrogant have dug pits for me, men who are not in accord with your law. All your commandments are faithful. They have persecuted me with a lie. Help me. They almost destroyed me on earth, but as for me, I didn't forsake your precepts. Revive me again, according to your loving kindness, that I may keep the testimony of your mouth. Forever, O Lord, your word is settled in heaven. Your faithfulness continues throughout all generations. You establish the earth and it stands. They stand this day according to your ordinances. For all things, they stand this day according to your ordinance, for all things are your servants. So everything's subject to God. If your law had not been my delight, then I would have perished in my afflictions. I will never forget your precepts. For by them you have revived me. I am yours. Save me, for I have sought your precepts. The wicked wait for me to destroy me. I shall diligently consider your testimony. So it's not just a matter of sitting around lazily, but thinking about it, thinking about how they apply diligently. Your testimonies. I have seen a limit to all perfection. Your commandment is exceedingly broad. Oh, how I love your law. It's my meditation all the day. Okay, we sing this one, of course. Your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever mine. I have more insight than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the aged, because I have observed your precepts. I have restrained my feet from every evil way, that I may keep your word. I have not turned aside from your ordinances, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste. Yes, sweeter than honey for my mouth, for you. From your precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. Your word's a lamp unto my feet and a light to my path. I have sworn and I will confirm it. that I will keep your righteous ordinances, and I am exceedingly afflicted. So this is not a guarantee to not have trials. Revive me, O Lord, according to your word. O accept the freewill offerings of my mouth. O Lord, and teach me your commandments. My life is continually in my hand, yet I do not forget your law. The wicked have laid a snare for me, yet I have not gone astray from your precepts. I have inherited your testimonies forever, for they are the joy of my heart. I have inclined my heart to perform your statutes forever, even to the end. So that's where we need to be inclined. We have a negativity bias, but we need to be inclined toward God's law. We have to work at that. I hate those who are double-minded, but I love your law. You are my hiding place and my shield. I wait for your word. Depart from me, evildoers, that I may observe the commandments of my God. Sustain me according to your word, that I may live. And don't let me be ashamed of my hope. Uphold me, that I may be safe, that I may have regard for your statutes continually. You have rejected all those who wander from your statutes, for their deceitfulness is useless. You have removed all the wicked of the earth like dross. Therefore, I love your testimonies. My flesh trembles for fear of you, and I'm afraid of your judgments. Not in a negative way. You realize that God's the ultimate judge. I have done justice and righteousness. Don't leave me to my oppressors. Be surety for your servant for good. Don't let the arrogant oppress me. My eyes fail with longing for your salvation and for your righteous word. Deal with your servant according to your loving kindness and teach me your statutes. I am your servant. Give me understanding that I may know your testimonies. It is time for the Lord to act, but they have broken your law. Therefore, I love your commandments above gold. Yes, above fine gold. Therefore, I esteem right all your precepts concerning everything. I hate every false way. Your testimonies are wonderful. Therefore, my soul observes them. The unfolding of your word gives light. It gives understanding to the simple. I opened my mouth wide and panted. I longed for your commandments. Turn to me, and be gracious to me after your manner with those who love your name. Establish my footsteps in your word, and don't let any iniquity have dominion over me. Redeem me from the oppression of man, that I may keep your precepts. Make your face shine upon your servant, and teach me your statutes. He says that again and again. Teach me your statutes. Teach me what I ought to do. My eyes shed streams of water because they do not keep your law. So he grieves that. Righteous are you, O Lord, and upright are your judgments. You have commanded your testimonies in righteousness and exceeding faithfulness. My zeal has consumed me because my adversaries have forgotten your words. Your word is very pure, therefore your servant loves it. I am small and despised, yet I do not forget your precepts. Your righteousness is an everlasting righteousness. Your law is truth. Trouble and anguish have come upon me, yet your commandments are my delight. Your testimonies are righteous forever. Give me understanding that I may live. I cried with all my heart, O Lord, I will observe your statutes. I cried to you, save me. And I shall keep your testimonies. I rise before dawn and cry for help. I wait for your words. My eyes anticipate the night watches, that I may meditate on your word. Hear my voice according to your loving kindness. Revive me, O Lord, according to your ordinances. He says revive all the time there. It's like, sometimes we feel like we need reviving. We don't feel dead necessarily, but we're wiped out. We need to be given life again. Revive me, O Lord, according to your ordinances. Those who follow after wickedness draw near. They are far from your law. You are near, O Lord, and your commandments are truth. Of old I have known truth from your testimonies, that you have founded them forever. Look upon my affliction and rescue me, for I do not forget your law. Plead my cause and redeem me. Revive me according to your word. Salvation is far from the wicked, for they do not seek your statutes. Great are your mercies, O Lord. Revive me according to your ordinances. Many are my persecutors and my adversaries, yet I don't turn aside from your testimonies. I behold the treacherous and loathe them because they don't keep your word. Consider how I love your precepts. Revive me, O Lord, according to your loving kindness. The sum of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous ordinances is everlasting. Princes persecute me without cause, but my heart stands in awe of your words. I rejoice in your word as one who finds great spoil. I hate and despise falsehood, but I love your law. Seven times a day I praise you because of your righteous ordinances. Those who love you, your law, have great peace, and nothing causes them to stumble. I hope for salvation, your salvation, O Lord, and do your commandments. My soul keeps your testimonies, and I love them exceedingly. I keep your precepts and your testimonies, for all my ways are before you. Let my cry come before you, O Lord. Give me understanding according to your word. Let my supplication come before you. Deliver me according to your word. Let my lips utter praise, for you teach me your statutes. Let my tongue sing of your word, for all your commandments are righteousness. Let your hand be ready to help me, for I've chosen your precepts. I long for your salvation, O Lord, and your law is my delight. Let my soul live that it may praise you, and let your ordinances help me. I've gone astray like a lost sheep. Seek your servant, for I do not forget your commandments. So whatever's right, those are all those things. There's so much there. And you know, it's kind of tedious, I guess, reading it all is a lot. And you know, maybe I'll do this again, I won't read everything. But it's just amazing when you look at it, you see on and on the way it's phrased, that God lifts us up above the mess. There's a radio station, there's a classical station in Washington, and they say, rise above it all. Now, they're being snotty about that, I guess, but you know, they're talking about, yeah, it's just the mess, especially if you're in Washington, I guess. You know, listen to our music and you'll rise above it all. Well, Psalm 119 saying that, you know, we can rise above the mess that's all around us by focusing on God's law and letting him lift us up and revive us and give us life again. So it's the third installment of dwelling on these things, and I think maybe, you know, in one way the most important one yet. And appreciate you listening to all of that that I read and the comments. But we need to dwell on these things. And one of them is whatever's right. And right is according to whatever's in God's law. And we can meditate on that day and night, as we say in the song that we sing from Psalm 119. And if we do that, we'll be able to fight the negativity that's all around us.